you'll see that America is still the land of the free.
Welcome to the Voice of Freedom, your national beacon of liberty. Now, here's your Voice of Freedom, Brent Johnson.
International explorer, biblical archaeologist, and author Jonathan Gray has led or accompanied 25 expeditions comprising teams of international researchers. He has published more than 100 books and videos, written several hundred papers, and hosted various newspaper columns around the world. Over the past 39 years, he has penetrated some largely unexplored areas of the world. He has led expeditions to the bottom of the sea, remote mountains, and desert regions. He is the author of The Weapon Globalists Fear, in which he provides what I consider to be irrefutable proof of the accuracy and divine source of the book of Genesis. Jonathan Gray, it is my sincere pleasure to welcome you to the show.
Brent, it's my pleasure to be with you today as well. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for getting up so early to be with us. Jonathan is in that part of the world that it is very, very early right now. Let's start with a basic definition of archaeology. Archaeology is a science, correct? So its conclusions are based on a scientific approach.
Yes, it's a physical science. It deals with items which can be seen, touched, felt, and documented by anybody who's got eyes to see and ears to hear. It makes it a non-speculative science. Speculations, of course, always attach themselves to everything, but facts are something that can be seen and felt and touched. You can't deny those.
Okay, now when we're talking about something universally known as the Book of Genesis, okay, it's obviously important if you're going to apply a scientific approach that you come out with a scientific result. When you were writing this book, did you find that your own personal faith in some way colored your conclusions, or how were you able to maintain the science without having the conclusions in some way adjusted, shall we say, on behalf of your faith?
Well, that's a very, very good question. I'm glad you asked that one, Brent. For many, many years, a good part of my life, I was totally antagonistic toward anything religious and biblical. And therefore, when I'm writing, I mean, I've associated for decades with people of similar mind. So when I'm writing, I'm always writing with the mindset that I will be a skeptic and that I have to prove to myself that this is correct and that it is scientific. And this is why my approach is for the skeptic rather than for the believer.
Okay, very good. That's a good framework for starting this. Now, I'd like to actually begin by sharing with the listeners just a couple of paragraphs from the beginning of the book. The propaganda has already molded society's thinking. The people continue to remain, for the most part, blissfully unaware of what has happened and continue to believe the litany of globalist lies being poured upon them by their propaganda media organs, never once raising any objection to billions of dollars being poured into perpetuating their ignorance. We see the result of this in many parts of the world, where the rights of the individual have come to be regarded as secondary to those of the state. They can indoctrinate your children against your beliefs, confiscate your property, vaccinate you forcibly, and so on. You say that globalism thrives on acceptance of the so-called theory of evolution. Can you explain that statement?
Yes. The globalists actually are following the same agenda that was followed by Hitler during World War, and the Nazis during World War II, by Stalin in Russia, by Mao in China, and by Pol Pot in Cambodia, and by other tyrants through modern times. Now, all of these have based their philosophy on the idea that we are here by accident, we're expendable for the good of those who are fitter and brighter, and that therefore there's nothing inherently wrong with reducing population or oppressing those who do not agree with our views. And the globalists are following the very same agenda. They have the same belief system, and this is something that the Book of Genesis is highly, of course, opposed to.
So if evolution is not true, what does that signify for the globalist agenda?
It means that their agenda is based upon a faulty premise, and therefore it should be challenged. And the average person should start looking very seriously at this evolution question, because it's going to be a life or death struggle in days to come between what the Book of Genesis teaches and what the globalists want to impose on the world.
From the book, Genesis says we are here by design. You and your precious children are worth more than silver or gold, that every person on this planet is of inestimable value. And that runs in direct opposition to the propaganda put forward by the New World Order. Now, you say here, did you know that physical scientific evidence definitely supports the Genesis account of creation? You write that this proof is found by examining the Earth's bedrock? Well, we'd like to hear an explanation of this, please. How have you proven the Genesis account?
Yes, it is. We do owe a debt to an American scientist, Robert Gentry, who first discovered this. And he was examining the bedrock, granite rocks of our Earth, which are the foundation rocks of all the continents. They don't contain any fossils, and they are the rocks that were in place before any sedimentation was placed over the top, layers of rocks such as we speak of today, strata. Now, in these foundation rocks, the original surface rocks of our planet, he discovered embedded in these rocks what we today know as Polonian halos. Now, these are radioactive bubbles, you might say, bubbles of polonium that had been found in what was once molten rock. Now, I would like to just give a parallel that makes it easier to understand. If you drop an Alka-Seltzer into a glass of water, tiny bubbles come up. And how long does a bubble last? Just an instant, doesn't it? Now,
right.
Suppose you dropped your Alka-Seltzer into water, then the water instantly froze. What would happen to the bubbles? The bubbles would be preserved. But that would have to be an instant freezing, otherwise the bubbles would have gone. Now, in this rock, Gentry discovered something that absolutely stunned him. Right through the granite rocks of our Earth, worldwide, there are millions and trillions of bubbles. These bubbles would only last for a few minutes at the most if the rock did not solidify or freeze a solid. And the fact that these bubbles are trapped there indicates that the molten rock of our planet became solid in minutes. The half-life of a Polonian atom is 3 minutes. So this indicates that a solidification of the rocks of our planet took place in just minutes, not millions of years, as the evolution theory tells us, like the slow cooling. It couldn't have happened. Otherwise, these bubbles wouldn't be there.
Now, wait a moment. I want to synopsize and mirror back to you what I just heard you say. You're saying that these polonium halos, as they're called, that polonium, the substance polonium, it dissipates within 3 minutes or so. And you're saying that these bubbles that dissipate within 3 minutes were frozen into the foundational bedrock of our planet?
Indicating that the rocks had to have frozen quickly, otherwise the palladium halos would not be there today.
Well, how many of these polonium halos were found by Professor Gentry?
He has found hundreds of thousands of them, and samples have been taken from all over the world. The pattern is that our foundation rocks of granite all contain these polonium halos.
My God, and no pun intended there. That is absolutely amazing. Tell me, Jonathan, what evidence exists? Let's move this on a little. That's absolutely amazing. That says that the world was really created, not that it took millions of years to settle in. That's what you're basically saying.
Yes.
Okay, let's go to the next one. What evidence exists that we all came from Adam and Eve? Is there evidence?
Well, yes, there is evidence. First of all, genetic tests have now been made on all branches of the human race, and scientists have actually, these are not Christian scientists, they're secular scientists, have come to the conclusion that all of us are descended from the same human mother. In fact, they even called her Eve. But at first they went back and said this took hundreds of thousands of years until they took a live sample, or shall I say a modern sample of genetic change, and discovered that it wasn't so long after all. But they said nobody would believe that it was only thousands of years ago, because we know better. The evolution theory says it's much older. But the tests showed that it was younger, and it stunned them.
So you're saying that there's actual scientific evidence that we come from one mother?
Yes, there's scientific evidence that we came from one mother. And scientists now are agreed on that. The evolution theory, of course, postulates that man could have evolved in here and there and different places. But the evidence is one human mother for the whole human race. And that's genetically now been traced through all races.
Wow. Now, what about the age of the book? The book of Genesis, it's been suggested that it was written by chroniclers from around the 6th century B.C. Now, I've read a lot. I've read the Bible cover to cover, 4 or 5 different versions, half a dozen times. I've read numerous books on the Bible, on how to read the Bible, and some of them have said exactly this, and they made sense to me at the time. What can you tell us about the age of the book of Genesis and the age of planet Earth?
Well, the age of the book of Genesis, it can be traced by its own contents, which is a big subject, Brent, and I'll try to summarize it very briefly. The construction of the book of Genesis shows it to be as old as the oldest document that we have today anywhere from the world, from the Mayans, the Sumerians, the ancient Indian races, all the Middle Eastern writings that have been unearthed. Now, archaeology, of course, is a fairly young science. It's less than 150 years old. But when the first documents were found in the Middle East, it was speculated by some similarities that the Genesis account may have been borrowed from the Sumerians. Now, of course, that now proves to be groundless, and not just myself, but the world's leading archaeologists admit that Genesis is not a borrowed document. It could not have been written in the 6th century BC because it contains archaic expressions, words, and information that was not available to people in the 6th century BC, or even from that time through to our day until recently. Now, what we're finding today is that just as Genesis claims certain things that were unknown in the 6th century right through to our day, today we know that those statements are correct. New documents are coming to light, new linguistic information, and it puts the book of Genesis right back there where it claims to be.
Wow, absolutely amazing information here. Our guest is Jonathan Gray, international explorer, biblical archaeologist, and author of, among other books, The Weapon Globalists Fear. And in this case, that weapon has got to be the truth. Our guest is international explorer, biblical archaeologist, and author Jonathan Gray. He has written a book. He's written a lot of books, but he's written this particular book, The Weapon Globalists Fear. And it's all about the veracity, proving the veracity of the book of Genesis and the ramifications of this. You know, in my mind, they just don't stop. Remember from V for Vendetta, when V tipped over the domino and a million dominoes went down. Well, I'll tell you something. This is that kind of topic. It tips over that domino, and so much that we have been led to believe will topple when you realize what's going on. Jonathan Gray, welcome back to the show. Just before the break, I had asked you about the age of planet Earth. And this is a big sticking point with the critics, the ones who come out and say, ah, Genesis is a fable. Genesis can't be true. The Earth is certainly older than Genesis suggests. What have archaeologists, what has science found out about the age of planet Earth?
Well, science has found out that the biblical chronology, the chronology of Genesis, is spot on. And right now, there are adjustments having to be made in historical understanding of the age of Egypt, for example. And Egypt is coming down very closely now to the time, the beginning of Egypt, historical beginning of the dynasties, to the time that Genesis suggests that this would have happened. But first of all, I'd just like to conclude a statement on the first woman from whom we are all descended. Using a complicated technique in original DNA studies, the findings of the scientists were that the first woman was only on Earth 6,000 years ago. First of all, they said that she was on Earth 100,000 to 200,000 years ago. And then they discovered remains of the mitochondrial DNA of the Russian royal family who were assassinated before a firing squad in 1918. And the DNA testing was able to settle that mutation rates. It's very, very interesting how it, but I can't go into the details of how this came, otherwise it would be just the whole program. But they had to reduce their dates for mtDNA ancestry for all living people from 100 to 200,000 years down to a mere 6,000 years old. Now, a statement was made in the magazine Science saying that, of course, no one believes this is so, but this is what we found. Very interesting statement. We found this, but nobody believes it.
And your mention of mitochondrial DNA, can you just briefly explain, you know, what the significance of that is, what mitochondrial DNA is?
Okay, then. This DNA actually is traced through the mother, through the female. It's an assortment of genes which we can trace back, and it's the DNA in the nucleus of our cells. It's passed on to us by our mothers alone. It's unique. It comes from mother only. Now, in order to find the approximate date of the original mother, they examined the rate of mutations, that's the alterations, in the mitochondrial organelles. They looked first at the most distant branches of the family tree, the DNA types most different from one another. Then they worked backward to figure out how many steps it would take for the first woman's original DNA to mutate into these different types. And they assumed that these mutations occurred at a regular rate. Now, using this technique, they got their figure of up to 200,000 years. But even this was too recent for the gradual change idea of evolution. And, of course, they could hardly believe that. But more recent research changed the mutation rate dating, and actually observed data was used, and they discovered that mutations occur a lot faster than they expected. And new DNA forensic procedures proved beyond any doubt to those that were doing the tests that the mitochondrial Eve, as they called her, the woman whose mtDNA was ancestral to all of us, using this new information, they said she could be a mere 6,000 years old.
Wow.
Now, they had no Bible in front of them. They simply had their scientific instruments and the DNA in front of them.
Now, that is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Please continue.
And that's recorded in Science magazine. a respected evolutionary magazine.
That is absolutely amazing. I'm so beside myself about this book. Comment from the book, folks. The New World Order moguls know that knowledge is power. So their agenda includes keeping you from knowing that you are a child of the Creator whose limitless power is available to you. If they can prevent you from knowing and believing this, they think their job will be easier when it comes to executing their wipeout of most people alive on the earth. We've talked about depopulation before. If you knew you are a child of God, if you knew that, how would it change the way you approach life? Our guest is international explorer, biblical archaeologist, and author Jonathan Gray, among other things. He is author of the book, The Weapon, Globalists Fear. We are discussing that book, which looks at the veracity of the book of Genesis. From our studio, we have a question for you, Jonathan. When you refer to the they have determined that Eve was only 6,000 years old. They have determined. Who exactly is they?
This is the evolutionary camp, those that want a godless world and believe that we're here by accident. And the evolution theory, of course, even if it was possible, which genetically it's not, it would require untold aeons of time, and so they need a long period of time. A few thousand years doesn't allow them to even get started.
No, what I'm saying is when you talk about how they have determined that, say, for example, Eve is the original mother, they have determined 6,000 years ago, who is they in that case? Who has determined these things?
Certainly. Now, these are scientists in the United States. In particular, there's Ann Gibbons, who wrote an article called Calibrating the Mitochondrial Clock in Science magazine. And there's a date I have here, January 2, 1998, page 28. And this was published by also the American Association for the Advancement of Science.
So, okay, so in other words, they in this case really do have names and credentials.
Yes, they do.
Excellent. I tell you what, let's take a call here. We've got a caller from Maryland. Welcome to the show. You are on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi there. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Oh, yes, I have both. I'd like to ask Jonathan Gray, if you know of a gentleman by the name of Barry Smith. He's a fellow Kiwi. He's since gone to go home with the Lord, and he had also talked upon the subject of archaeology confirming the Bible, which is basically men say that this, that, and the other thing, but actually the Bible has told us what is.
So you're asking whether or not he's familiar with Barry Smith.
Yes, yeah. I'm familiar with Barry Smith and his work. He did some good work.
Yes, I it was a great loss, but I'm happy to see that there are other people carrying on.
Excellent.
And be blessed. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, and thank you for the call. We appreciate that very much.
Yes, comments appreciated. Thank you.
866-238-2120 is the toll-free number if you'd like to be part of the show, 866-AFR-2120. And let's go right to the phones, and there we go. All right. Welcome to the show. You are on the air.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Doing terrific. What do you think of this conversation, and do you have a question or comment for our guests?
Yeah, this is Lee calling in, and I first of all want to tell everyone that I have been chomping at the bit to read this book, and Brent has been hoarding it. He will not give it to me, and he sits there going, wait until you read this, and I'm waiting to read it. So anyway, I have a question for Mr. Gray. Could you please explain to me what scientific proof or information we have about the raising of the firmament?
Yes, the firmament actually is a word, it comes from a word in Genesis which refers to a stretching out stretching out like an arc, like an arc, A-R-C. Now, in the book of Genesis, it speaks of the waters being above the firmament and beneath the firmament. Now, scientifically, the planet appears to have had a good climate from pole to pole, from the North Pole to the South. It looked like, to scientific discovery, we had a world once that had no ice, there were no extremes of heat and cold. It was like a terrarium. And this would be true if there was such an arc of water vapor separating, separated around the Earth like a canopy or a cover to protect the Earth from the harmful cosmic rays. Now, some other planets do have the same, and moons that have been discovered do have it as well. So the Earth actually did have a canopy, a water canopy, that was frozen above the atmosphere, according to the best discoveries we can make. And this collapsed during the Great Flood.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. Thank you, Lee. Appreciate the call very, very much. Our guest is Jonathan Gray. The book that we are discussing is The Weapon the Globalists Fear, which presumably is the truth. Now, in Genesis...
Before you go off that road, I have to ask this question. I wanted to ask the guest if he is familiar with the work of Kent Hovind.
Say that again, please.
Are you familiar with the work of Kent Hovind?
Yes, I am. I think Kent Hovind has done a tremendous amount of research, and a lot of his research we have here, it's excellent. We sometimes use it.
Okay, I was just curious to see, because it sounds to me as though your line of thought and his are very much very similar.
Yes, we do come very close.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask, are you familiar with Professor Carl Baugh?
Yes, Carl and I have been friends for some years. I've been to his museum. We've corresponded a number of times.
And yeah, because as I read this book, I thought, my, a lot of this sounds like what Carl Baugh has said, creation in symphony. Let's get back to the topic at hand. In Genesis, it is written that the Almighty rained down fire and brimstone on the abominable cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, I understand that you discovered the locations of those cities surrounding the Dead Sea, and even more, you saw firsthand, you found evidence that it really happened. You've got to tell us this story.
Well, it's a long story. I've been into these ruins 8 times now. My very first night in Gomorrah. Now, Gomorrah is very easily located. It's about 20 miles north of a mountain called Mount Sodom, which is to the south. Now, just below Masada, between Masada and the Dead Sea, there are white, burnt, ashen ruins, which still have much of the shape of the old buildings there to be seen. And I slept in those ruins on my very first night. It was quite an eerie experience, actually, because I noticed that there were wild animal tracks coming across these white shapes. Now, the white shapes are in contrast to the brown desert all around, totally different. You can see where the city ends and begins very easily. There were double city walls. There are streets. There are shapes of buildings on both sides of the streets. There are side streets. There are doorways into some. The whole thing has turned to ash. We've had remains from these streets and from buildings taken to the laboratories. They say, yes, this is burnt ash, no question about it. This whole area was subject to fire and turned to ashes.
Now, just a moment, Jonathan, let me interrupt. I want to make sure people understand what you mean by turn to ash. What you're saying is that you could see the city, you could see the outlines of the buildings, everything. It's just if you went and you were to touch that, you would actually, your hand would go into a bunch of ash. That's what you're saying, basically, right?
That's right. And it's very hard, but once you break off a little piece and squeeze it in your hand, it becomes talcum powder.
Astonishing. Now, what did you find that led to the evidentiary understanding that Sodom and Gomorrah really happened. I mean, that there really was fire and brimstone, that it wasn't just a metaphor for something that happened back then. You found something that was evidence.
Yes, yes, we certainly did. I took a whole team in one night, and we slept in the ruins, and before we did that, we wanted to lay down our ground sheet to sleep on the ground outside our four-wheel drive. I hopped down to the ground. My wife was behind me in the seat behind. She shone the torch, and she screamed, "There it is! There it is!" I told her what I was looking for, and she said, "There it is!" And the cameras came out. I picked up a little piece of something. I put it on a spoon. I got out a match, lit a match, and put it to this little piece of whatever it was, and it started burning. You smell it, it's sulfur. You take it to a laboratory, it's sulfur. It's almost pure sulfur, 93% sulfur. But it does contain substances which would help it to burn hotter, the other 7%.
Now, wait a minute. You said it was burning.
We set fire to this ball. It was a ball of sulfur. And we found these. There are millions of them all over the ruins, Brent, everywhere you go. And many of them are embedded in the sides of the structures. Others have fallen out and are just lying where they are. And we have gone to geologists worldwide and said, is there anything similar that you know anywhere? The answer is no. You do find sulfur around volcanic areas. You find it in a different form. But what you find in the remains of these locations in the southern desert of Israel is so different, and I'll describe it. Pressed powder consistency, balls of sulfur, surrounded by black crystallized burns, skins, just like the skin of an apple, embedded in the ash with burn rings around them. I'll repeat that. Pressed powder balls of sulfur with burn rings around them.
So now, okay, now wait a moment. You're telling me, though, that when you went to actually put fire to this, it just lit right up. This is after sitting around for thousands of years. It still had the juice in it?
Oh, yes. Yes. In this desert, of course, it's been well preserved. You don't get a lot of rain. Most of the time, however, you don't see the sulfur balls. You just see a few here and there. But after a rain shower, which is rare, I prayed for this one on my third visit in because I wanted this television team to come in and really see it for themselves. After rain, which we had the night before we arrived, the ash had got washed away a little bit, and all these balls were lying everywhere. We actually went out under moonlight and we started picking them up for hours during the night under the full moon. It was a beautiful sight to see all these glistening balls wet, and we were picking them up and putting them in our specimen bags. And when I give lectures, I always burn a sulfur ball for my audience, for that they can let them see it and they can smell it, they can see the blue flame that comes from it.
And you're saying the configuration of these was such that they had to have fallen from the sky?
Yes, they are lying around just like drops of rain, except that they're made of sulfur. The Bible says that God rained down. Well, they fell like rain because here they are all over the ruins, just like a whole lot of drops, except they're little balls.
Just amazing, absolutely amazing. The book is The Weapon Globalists Fear. And indeed, am I accurate? Is the weapon the truth? Is the weapon the fact that if Genesis is true, okay, that everything the globalists have been promoting is false, is that the weapon?
That's the weapon. And firstly, the weapon is the information in Genesis. That's true, the truth. That God is the creator, that man has no right to go against his laws. Secondly, that man is precious, not to be slaughtered. The book of Genesis says, he that sheds man's blood, by him will blood be shed. Then the fact that the Bible speaks of the family situation. God made the first family, and the family is one of the things they want abolished. The fact that world government is doomed to failure, and we have the Tower of Babel in Genesis, which shows God's attitude toward an attempt at world government in one language.
By the way, folks, just so you know, even though we're not addressing each of these items, because we only have so much time, you've got to get this book. All of this is addressed in this book. It's The Weapon Globalists Fear. Let me give out the website here. It's www.beforeus.com. That's BEFOREUS. Beforeus.com. And, Jonathan, can people find out from the website how to order the book?
Yes, they can. After they key in beforeus.com, they should make a forward slash and then the word weapon, hyphen ebook.html.
Okay, so beforeus.com/weapon-ebook.html. Check it out, folks. This is absolutely astonishing book. Now, before I let you go, Jonathan, we're going to check and see if Dave has anything to add as well. But before we do that, I want to ask you one non-Genesis question, just because I happened to come by a story recently about an expedition that claims they could have found Atlantis buried somewhere in southern Spain. Have you had any involvement with any of the expeditions searching for the location of the Atlantis continent?
No, Brent, I haven't had personal involvement in any of those expeditions. But I should say this, that the similarities of the story of Atlantis with many of the features of the pre-flood world in Genesis, there's very, very interesting similarities. And the old legends could perhaps be a relic of the memory of the pre-flood world. Or, should I say, after the flood, there were so many, for hundreds of years, an adjustment of the earth's crust brought many great upheavals in which cities sank and land rose and fell, that there could perhaps be a memory of a post-flood event that took place. I'm not prepared to make a stand one way or the other, but there is evidence for both.
Excellent. Dave, it's such a huge topic. I'm sure that I haven't touched on everything, but do you have anything burning for our guest?
Well, I just wanted to ask him, there's a lot of talk now about the year 2012. I mean, all of the great religions all pointed that period of time that we're coming up upon. The Mayan calendar, which is probably one of the most accurate, if not the most accurate calendar that was ever devised by mankind, ends on December 21st, 2012. Of course, the book of Revelation talks about this particular time in the end times. I wanted to ask the guest if he sees the same thing that many other people see. We just talked about continental shift. We know that Alaska used to be on the equator. Do you see something coming of, shall we say, biblical proportions on that date?
Very interesting question. Well, I do see events of biblical proportions coming very soon. I would not pin them to that date necessarily. The Mayan calendar, as you say, is perhaps the most accurate we've ever seen. The Mayans actually only looked upon that date as the end of a calendar and the beginning of the next, because it's the actual date when the Earth's orbit and the orbit of our solar system crosses the equator of the Milky Way. It's a long-term event that astronomically would take 25,000 years to come back and do the same thing again. And in our history, this is the first time this has happened. Now, whether anything super physical would occur as a result of the crossing the equator, who knows? But we know that great events are soon to take place, but I wouldn't pin them down necessarily to that date.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because, of course, Revelation and many other religions point to the idea of Planet X or Nibiru. There's also, about 4 or 5 years ago, they discovered that at the center of the Milky Way is a massive black hole. And many people are talking. Oh, and also a couple of weeks ago, we reported that National Geographic News had reported that the magnetic pole has shifted 64 miles in 1 year. So there is a possibility that as we approach that meridian point, hey, maybe the Earth will do a polar shift. And of course, that would wreak absolute havoc with the Earth's crust. the world climate. I mean, again, we're talking about an event that could be of biblical proportions and would fit in with all of the great religions.
Well, it certainly would. That's very true. We'll have to wait and see. But we do know that Revelation speaks of these things, and the scripture does say the earth will be turned upside down. So we take that either literally or metaphorically, one way or the other.
Thank you so much. Jonathan Gray has been our guest. We could spend shows worth just speaking with you. It's such a fascinating topic. The book is The Weapon Globalists Fear. You can access that and all kinds of other information concerning Jonathan Gray at www.beforeus.com. Beforeus.com. Jonathan, thank you so much for getting up so early for us and for bringing us this fascinating topic. I'm just so impressed with the work that you have done. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brent. It's been a privilege and a pleasure.
All right. Jonathan Gray, www.beforeus.com.
Thank you for listening to this edition of The Voice of Freedom. Opinions expressed are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the views of Truth and Freedom Radio Networks, Freedom Broadcast Group Incorporated, or our sponsors. For more information about your freedoms and liberties, or to contact Brent, just log on to our website at www.freedomradio.us or call 1-888-385-3733. Join us next time for another lesson in liberty on The Voice of Freedom.
America, land of the free, right to life and liberty. Open your eyes and you will see that America is still the land of the free.